Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Welcome to Red Shirts and Runabouts, the Star Trek podcast on the Heroes Podcast Network. I am your regular host, Derek, known as the Star Trek Dude, and I have with me my two wonderful recurring guest hosts who are joining me on the 10-episode trek through Star Trek's new animated universe, Star Trek Lower Decks. Those people are Zach.
Hey.
And Ray.
What up?
What up indeed. This week, this is our 99th episode here on Red Shirts and Runabouts, and for our 99th episode, we are reviewing and discussing Star Trek Lower Decks Episode 4, Moist Vessel, which is the 782nd episode of Star Trek, which is a crazy number, but it is.
In this series, it's amazing.
Yeah. According to Memory Alpha, Stardate 5753 8.9, for those who are keeping track at home.
I wasn't, but I can pretend.
Good. That's what
I want to hear. I monitor that daily.
Before we get started, though, not a lot of Star Trek news to really talk about here this week. We do have a little bit from Alex Kurtzman on the Section 31 series. Basically, he said that Michelle Yao, that was her idea, actually. She came to Kurtzman before Star Trek Discovery Season 1 even premiered and talked to him about doing something with Georgiou, that she loved Georgiou and she wanted to do more with Georgiou. And of course, obviously, spoiler alerts for Star Trek Discovery, but we get more Georgiou. And now we're going to get the Section 31 show. And what's interesting here is... Kurtzman kind of alludes to maybe the Section 31 show isn't what a lot of us have been guessing. A lot of us have guessed, you know, it'll just be the, okay, more spoilers for Discovery, I apologize, but this is going to be the Mirror Universe Emperor Georgiou who joins Section 31, right? And it'll be a show about her, and it'll either take place in the distant future with season, you know, where season 3 of Discovery is, or they'll end up back home in a more normal time period, and that's where it'll take place. But, you know, Kurtzman's kind of alluding to maybe that's not the case. You know, what, I guess here would be my question. If anything, what would you want to see from this show?
Oof. I don't know. And just like we've talked about last week with Lower Decks, I hold this show to a different standard because for me, like right now, Discovery and a little bit of Picard are the flagships. And so, you know, I'm easier on Lower Decks than I would be simply because it's something different. It's the animated feature before the main film. And so with the Section 31 show, I mean, I hope it gets a little darker and I hope it makes the fanboys angry and causes them to cry that this isn't my Star Trek, because why not? Like, you've got so many Trek shows right now to explore different facets of this universe. Why not go somewhere that maybe boldly go somewhere we haven't been before, if I may. So, and I don't even necessarily have to like it. I just want it to be something different, because I think in the late 90s, we hit a saturation point where there was too much Trek. We had multiple movies, we had multiple shows, and I think that everything was kind of samey, and it saturated the market, and then we went through a drought for a while because just the industry and I think fans were kind of tired of the same old stuff. So if Trek is going to thrive the way the MCU has thrived, for example, then we need to be exploring different corners of this mythology. So I hope it's a little weird. I hope it's something different and unique and still Star Trek, but I hope it, you know, makes me question things a bit. And that's what Section 31's always done anyways.
Ray, what about you? Is there anything you want to see from a Section 31 show starring Georgiou in some form?
Well, honestly, like I want to see Section 31 fleshed out because the very little that I've seen of Section 31 at this time, they've kind of used them as different things. I've seen them being used as an espionage group. I've seen them be used as, you know, bodyguards and enforcers. And so really just pinpointing what they're used for would be perfect, their purpose. And I think that wasn't ever going to be done unless they had their own show. And then secondly, if they go the espionage way, then I kind of want this to be like a Jason Bourne meets Star Trek kind of situation, because like Zach was saying, a lot of what we've seen has been sanitized to fit Roddenberry's kind of vision. And there's nothing wrong with that if it's coming from a strictly Starfleet point of view. But now that, you know, Section 31 has been added into the canon by many different directors, we know that it's not completely sanitized. So this is a chance to get down and dirty.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're definitely able to do more mature content on All Access, and we've already seen that in both Picard and Discovery. And, you know, Lower Decks, of course, is a little bit brighter. They are bleeping out their curse words and things like that.
But so uncomfortable that they're doing that. I'd rather just hear the cuss words.
It's a little weird since, like, the other shows aren't bleeping them out.
Mm-hmm.
So right. On the same network or service.
Even with the bleeped out swear words, like, this is not a kids show, so I don't know what their motive is for bleeping it out.
I think it's to add a little bit of extra humor in there, because I always kind of giggle when they do it. It's totally involuntary, and it doesn't make any sense to me, but
there's a moment like that in this episode that we're going to talk about tonight. That was, yeah. It made me laugh. It was almost funnier not knowing what words they used, though I could kind of figure it out.
Yeah, Ray and I thought they meant two different things. So.
Oh, well, we'll have to discuss that then.
Yeah, so we'll get to that. We'll get to that for sure. So one thing I want to point out is we've been doing polls on Twitter and in our Facebook group, the Red Shirts and Runabouts Facebook group, just kind of grading these episodes for Lower Decks as we go. And because of the time frame where we turn around these episodes, I don't have the results of the polls by the time we record. So those are a little lagged when we talk about them here. And I just wanted to throw out that episode 3, Temporal Edict, on Twitter, 36% gave it an A, and another almost 29% gave it an, 36% gave it a B, and an almost 29% gave it an A. The D or lower portion, though, was larger, with over 21% giving it a D or lower, which I thought was a little surprising, given people have kind of overall thought that each episode was slightly better than the one before. And just kind of like thinking back to last week, why do you think it has a little bit more on the low end? Do you think anything in particular causes people to kind of dislike this one stronger than the first two?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I actually enjoyed this one a little bit more because I feel like it's starting to kind of find its footing and we're starting to learn more about these characters and their relationships. And, you know, I'm not without complaints by any means, but that's a good question. I think if anything, maybe this is the first time where it was more action heavy. It was less Lower Decks heavy. Like the A plot was the A plot for the bridge crew as well, kind of. because the B plot in and of itself brought one of the Lower Decks characters into the bridge crew. So it was less Lower Decks focused, and it felt, honestly, it felt more like just a shorter TNG episode. Like I could have seen this as TNG or Voyager, because of the way the plot went.
That's fair. Now here's one possibility. I'm wondering if maybe it had to do with more of the anti-new Trek type fans, because in our group, which is a little more, you know, locked down, it's not open to the public, it's a private group, nobody gave it a D or lower in our poll.
Right.
And I finally hit some friction this week with the anti-new Trek crowd on Twitter. This is the next topic I want to talk about with you guys, but I asked the Twitterverse and in our Facebook group as well, what are your top three favorite Star Trek films? Didn't matter the order.
Yeah.
Just what are your top three favorite Star Trek films? And it was interesting. So on the positive side, I saw a lot of people put The Voyage Home in their top three, which felt really good because it's a very like kind of feel good, fun, lighthearted movie.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there was a lot of the more not stereotypical answers necessarily, but more common answers of The Wrath of Khan, The Undiscovered Country, First Contact. Those three usually are in everybody's list. At least one of them is. Mm-hmm. And there were a handful of people that were basically like, if you include a Kelvin film or you don't include Wrath of Khan, you're wrong.
Yeah, I saw that. And on the Facebook group, at least, the three of us in this podcast have the same top three films.
We did. How weird is that?
Yeah.
So our top three...
We don't always agree on Star Trek or anything.
Or anything. So, Ray, what are your top three favorite Star Trek films?
So you want me to say all of our top three? That's what you're doing.
Hey, whatever your order. Well, is the order the same for all three of us too?
Probably not.
Okay. So then what's yours?
Undiscovered Country, First Contact, Beyond.
Okay. Zach, what's your order to yours?
Oh, man. I hadn't thought about it before now, but I guess I would have to say same. Undiscovered Contact. Let's go. Yeah. Undiscovered Country, First Contact, and then Beyond in that order. Yeah.
So
chronological.
Yeah. The order in which I saw them and fell in love with them.
There you go. I'm slightly different. I have First Contact and then Undiscovered Country before Beyond. But I do really think it's interesting that the three of us who have fairly different Star Trek backgrounds still picked not only the same three movies, but it's also the three different casts, essentially.
Yeah.
It's three different eras, so to speak, which is kind of not I didn't do that on purpose or anything like that. So I don't know. Thought that was interesting.
The best of the three casts.
That's fair. But yeah, so lots of interesting stuff. I did have somebody, just one person. I had, how many people responded to me here? Like 70 something people on Twitter, 75 responses on Twitter, let alone Facebook. But one person did say The Final Frontier, Star Trek V. And, which was, and there was a couple of people who said Nemesis as well. So I liked that while those movies may not be my favorite Star Trek films, I certainly don't hate them. And it's nice to know that like they really resonate with some people for whatever reason. I love the camping scenes in Final Frontier. I think they're wonderful.
I love the camping scenes and that movie has the single best moment that Bones has on screen in any movie or TV episode at all. Like that was brilliant. When he gets to say goodbye to his father and like face that. I don't even hate the scene with Shatner saying, "I need my pain." Like that was a really well acted scene.
I think everything that happens in that whole scene, that whole room, I think is really good.
Very profound.
You know, for me, yeah, some of the areas where it falls apart are more like budgetary problems.
Yeah.
You know, or like just kind of like odd decisions, like the ship falling apart never made sense to me.
The extra decks on the ship.
Yeah.
Uhura like being the sex appeal at the age of whatever. Not that you can't be sexy at whatever age. It was just an awkward scene. It was an awkward scene. She's a beautiful woman. I love her and admire her greatly. But it was just the scene was not shot well.
It's incredibly out of place because that's something they've never done with her before. Honestly, like just watching the original series, I always felt that she was incredibly beautiful and sexy, but they still gave her like a little more meat than some of the other women. I always figured Yeoman Rand was there for sex appeal more than Uhura was, but I don't know. I guess Shatner kissed her and was like, I'm going to force her to be naked, guys. Sorry.
She wasn't naked.
No, I know she wasn't. I know it was supposed to be implied. She wasn't actually naked on set or anything, but it was supposed to be implied that she was not wearing as many clothes as she usually does. That's all.
But a lot of feathers.
A lot of feathers, yeah. But in our Facebook group where we did the poll as well, and you know, Twitter restricts you to just 4 poll options. So this was more of just a comment type thing. But in the Facebook group, we could actually do a poll with all 13 options. And I thought it was interesting that Final Frontier, Nemesis, and Into Darkness, none of them got a single vote for a top three. Which, I mean, those are the bottom three for me. You know, so I mean, I'm fine with it. But
we've discussed this before. I am alone in this camp. I think that the Kelvin movies get better as they go on. I like the first one. I like 2009 less and less every time I watch it. Whereas Into Darkness, I'm like among our friend group, I may be the only Into Darkness apologist, but that's okay. I'll carry that torch.
Yeah, not to go on a tangent, but you know what movie I like less every time I watch it?
It's not Star Trek. It is a total tangent.
Seven.
Oh, no. I've only seen it the one time, so good to know I don't need to watch it again. Thank you. I am making note of the diminishing returns.
It's kind of like profound the first time, and then every time you watch it, you're like, no, it's not. Like,
There are movies like that where once you know what's coming, it's no longer profound. There's also a subcategory of those movies where once you know what's coming, it's maybe almost a little bit better the second time because you can see different things. And then third, fourth, fifth time, it's just shit. So,
but that's a total tangent. It's not even Star Trek related.
No.
All right. So we need to move on, of course, to our main topic, which is Moist Vessel.
Is there
anything else anybody wants to add to the top three Star Trek films conversation?
No.
We all agree that'd be a really boring conversation.
Well, I just figured I'd ask, but we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we will be talking about Star Trek Lower Decks Episode 4, Moist Vessel.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
All right, and we are back to talk Moist Vessel. I'm just going to keep saying it because it's a ridiculous title.
How many times can we say that in one episode? If you're watching at home, this is a drinking game. You need to take a shot every time Derek says Moist Vessel, and hopefully you're still alive here in 45 minutes.
That's funny. So episode 4 of Star Trek Lower Decks premiered today, which is August 27th, 2020. As I said earlier, it's the 782nd episode of Star Trek, the franchise in general. Of course, this episode currently is sitting at a 7.3 on IMDb, which is pretty good compared to the rest of season one. The rest of season one has kind of taken a pretty big hit, with the first episode having a 6.2 and episodes 2 and 3 being a 6.4. So 7.2 is a pretty good jump for Moist Vessel. The show as a whole is definitely not being perceived particularly well. It's at 5.6, which I think is a little harsh. But how did you guys feel about this one? This one was a little more streamlined, a little more action-packed. What'd you think? Ray, let's start with you.
Oh, all right. This has been my favorite episode before, and it continues to be like that. I like each episode a little bit more and more. If anybody has listened to the podcast last three episodes, they know that I have a huge issue with Mariner just being a dick the entire time and still coming out on top. So this time it was pretty great that not only was she just being messed with constantly by her own mother, but she ended up pulling through and working with her mom too. So this episode had me like not just tolerating her, but you know, she grew on me a bit. And then Tendi was wonderful, and not really Rutherford. He wasn't really in this episode a lot. And Boimler was kind of funny. You know, he just wants to get ahead so badly, and he keeps messing up, that poor little bastard.
Zach, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a little bit more than I have the previous three. I feel like the character relationships are starting to develop, and that's fun to watch. I agree with everything Ray is saying. Also, in between us filming last week's episode and us filming this week's episode, I finally got around to watching The Boys. So I put two and two together that Boimler, played by Jack Quaid, is one of the main characters in The Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And almost the same character, to be perfectly honest. Like,
That's funny. That's so great.
I enjoy him, but not a lot of range that we've seen thus far. So that made me, I don't know, I maybe liked Boimler a little bit more, but also he was like less in the forefront, and so his character was maybe less annoying. Again, Tendi is a perfect little snowflake, and I adore her, and she's my favorite part of the show to date. But yeah, I really love the relationships, and I love Mariner and her mom and that whole conflict. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, this was definitely my favorite episode so far. I think it was just firing on all cylinders. It basically felt like they found their rhythm, mm-hmm. you know, and the relationship moments between Mariner and Freeman, her mom, are just the best parts of this episode. They're really great. They play off of each other really well, which is not an easy thing to do in animation, let alone, you know, it's hard to do in real life. It's also harder to do in animation, especially because they may not have even been recording in the same place, you know?
Yeah.
I just thought that was really great. So I thought that overall, this was a very, very Star Trek episode, mm-hmm. right? The whole plot is just super Star Trek. You know, everything about it. How many times have we seen, like, there's a derelict ship that we found floating in space, and we probably shouldn't touch it, but let's go ahead. And, you know, like, that whole thing. It's a Star Trek thing that's done. I don't know if I would go so far as to call it a trope, but it's a thing that's done. And everything about it worked out. It was nice to see a Tellarite, our Tellarite captain, which is something we don't get much of in Star Trek. You know, most of the shows have kind of ignored the Tellarites, not like that they exist, but just haven't really brought them on the show very much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is something I've really noticed a lot, but I thought that was really cool. So let's dive into things. Let's dive into it. I am really glad that the episode goes where it does, because when we start things off with Mariner mocking the whole meeting with the yawns and everything like that, I kind of rolled my eyes a little bit.
Yep.
I was like, same. Really? Are we doing this already? Because like, I felt like it's a little too much. And so yep. I'm glad the rest of the episode saves it. But you guys felt the same way?
Absolutely.
Okay. I thought maybe it was I was being overly sensitive about it or something like that. But
no, I was like immediately like, oh God, am I gonna hate this episode? Is this where I decide I hate this show? Like, I've been super open minded for this whole time, and I was like, oh, is this gonna ruin it for me? But it didn't.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't like the opening scene because of my main criticism with the movie. I don't like when one of the characters we're supposed to love and connect with is just a constant dick and there's no repercussions. Like, so far she has saved everybody and it is pretty unsatisfying. So when they started that off, I was like, oh, well, what a jerk. Like, just you're only in the room for 30 seconds and you yawned four times.
Yeah.
I liked the punishments that, you know, her mom came up with and Ransom helped come up with, because I thought they were pretty clever, but also it showed a side of Captain Freeman that helps support why Mariner is the way that she is, right? Mm-hmm. That her own mother is not really the greatest Starfleet officer in the world. She's not a great captain. She doesn't appear to be a great mother. And Mariner has been brought up in that lifestyle. And so she's not a great officer either. She's not the world's best person. And maybe they're getting better, right? Especially over the course of the episode. But you know, I appreciated Mariner's ability to try and actually and find fun in some of these tasks that she was set up with. And that leads us to something we had mentioned earlier, which is the holodex, which I assume is the scene you were talking about, Zach.
Yes. The famous bleep scene. And apparently the two of you disagreed on what was said. So we should probably recap what the quote was with bleeps and then fill in the blanks like a Mad Lib.
Put me on the spot. I don't know that I have the quote in front of me.
Okay, so Derek thought it was a sex thing, and yeah. I thought it was like a poop thing. I was like, are people really pooping in the holodeck? Because honestly, like, when I learned that people poop in dressing rooms, it like really angered me, because I never thought about that. If there's no toilet, you don't do it. And
well, they can make a holographic toilet. I did find the quote. I've got the quote here for us for Zach's little game. It's quote, I've got her emptying blank out of the holodex blank filter, to which she replied, ugh, people really use it for that? Oh yeah, it's mostly that. I thought it was sex related.
Same. I thought it was filtering cum out of the sex filter.
Oh God.
Now that is totally more believable for me, because to be completely honest, like, that's what it comes off as. And I feel like I feel like the DS9 crew does so much work to maintain that it's for entertainment and casual like reenactments and stuff, but I mean, honestly,
not God. Quark. Quark is willing to pimp it out as whatever you want it
to
be.
He is. But like, if Derek and I were on a Star Trek ship, like, I can imagine we'd use that thing at least once a week to just, you know, have some really weird times.
Yeah. Apparently. But I mean, it's alluded to a lot, though, right? I mean,
yes.
Riker gets freaky in there.
Tuvok uses it at one point on Voyager, because he, you know, goes through Ponfar while they're stranded in the Delta Quadrant. You know, so we know that it has been used for that by the end of Voyager's run.
I mean, you know? the Orville has something very similar, and it's called out within the first season, like five or six episodes, and the one of the guys has a porn addiction.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Well, I mean, Riker spends a lot of time in the holodeck playing trombone for some pretty ladies, and I don't think he stops after he's done with his trombone solo. Like, I think he introduces him to another trombone, and things get a little weird.
Wow. All right. Okay.
We know Riker's sexual tastes are seldom satiated. Yes. Very much in line with Captain Kirk, but maybe a little bit weirder, to be honest.
So that's one of the tasks that she has to do. There's, of course, lubing the turbo lift and then cleaning the carbon filters, which, honestly, that job didn't really seem bad. It's just pointing a phaser at a rectangle. It didn't really seem like a real difficult job. The other two jobs seemed like more like dirtier jobs, you know?
That one seemed fun, to be honest.
Right.
Like, there's a satisfaction in like cleaning off an old greasy pan. Not a cast iron skillet, but like an old greasy pan.
But they're using phasers too, so it's not even like they have to work really hard.
Oh no, yeah, they're not scrubbing. And then they make a game out of it. Like why is Mariner the first one to think of making a game out of it? Like that seems unlikely.
Right.
I don't know. I think it makes sense because she doesn't really take things seriously until it's like a life or death situation.
That's right? Fair.
And so she's bored. She doesn't want to be doing this. She thinks it's weird she's been assigned it. So what's she going to do? She's not going to take it seriously.
Yeah.
Fair.
I don't know. I asked Ray this when we were, I mentioned this when we were watching it, but like, did you recognize the alien woman that she's doing that with? Like, did you recognize her species at all?
I did not.
Okay. I didn't either. Yeah. All right. Well, I just figured I'd ask. So of course we have Tendi's story, which she is excited because she gets a chance to watch an ascension, which Lieutenant O'Connor is apparently performing, voiced by Haley Joel Osment, which is kind of fun. So she goes in. It's this big ceremony. There's a mistake in that scene, by the way, that I have to call out because I can. When Tendi enters the quarters and you get a shot from towards the doorway and you can see some of the people sitting around, there is a woman officer whose comm badge is on the wrong side of her uniform. And when they cut back later, after Tendi's like started making a ruckus, it's in the correct spot.
Totally missed that.
Yeah. Yep. It's kind of like how on DS9, when they first switched uniforms to the movie era uniforms, mm-hmm. Cisco's badge is in the wrong, it's too high. It's up in the gray instead of on the black for a couple of episodes.
Yeah.
But it's only his. It's nobody else's. So just, I gotta throw that out there for the animators or whatever. I don't know if they did it on purpose to see if anybody would notice or if it was just a mistake, but I noticed.
Your boy Derek saw it.
That's right.
You thought you'd get away with it, but you were wrong.
But what'd you guys think of the whole ascension concept in the storyline? Were you surprised the person was human? Did you expect a different kind of alien? Like, what was going through your head?
I mean, I expected maybe an alien. I didn't really know what to expect. I thought it'd be something more alien and unique than just a human. I wasn't surprised, and I was relieved when it was just some dude who was like lying to get, because that was his thing, because he was trying to distinguish himself. Like, I thought that was pretty funny. And this is, again, not something we see a lot in Star Trek, because we're used to seeing crews who are just the best. We're not used to seeing everyone else who's maybe trying to get there. And so that was funny. And I liked him and Tendi's plot. I liked that they kind of both connected on like a, and this is going to rustle a lot of old core Trek fans' feathers, but I like that they bonded over like this really flawed human characteristic of trying to make other people like them. I thought that was cool. And I think that like the enthusiasm with which Tendi recognizes that and embraces it and is excited about it. It's antithetical to Trek for that to be a thing that they would bond over. And yet her enthusiasm to own like, oh my gosh, we have the same character flaw. We're best friends now. And to embrace that and to be open-minded about that and to like make peace with her own baggage and to be loving and accepting of that when she sees it in someone else as opposed to combative. Like, that's
beautiful.
That's a very Trek mentality at its core. And I like that.
Ray, what about you? Any thoughts about the ascension?
Oh, I completely agree. I think it's absolutely, I think it was a really fun plot line because part of me was like, he can't do it, can he? Like, he's just messing around. And then it happens that is true. Like, he has not been able to do it. So he keeps using excuse after excuse, and Tendi is his excuse this time. And like, I know Zach and I have personally struggled with wanting everybody to like us at different times. So
no.
I was gonna say, don't leave me high and dry here. Like, we have had this conversation.
We have.
So I just thought it was cute, and their kiss kind of reminded me of what the kiss between Rey and Kylo was supposed to be, how it was just like an expression of excitement and adrenaline at that time, only this was done way better.
Yeah.
You know, like,
okay.
So I just thought it was a cute B plot line. I thought the ascension was kind of funny. And especially at the end, we always see these kind of heavenly situations where people become energy or they evolve, and it's painless and beautiful. And this poor man, you know, literally his corporeal body is being burned. And
yeah.
That was kind of funny.
This hurts.
I'm torn on that, because on one hand, I totally agree with you, and I think it's a really funny way to flip the script on that. But on the other hand, I don't know that it makes sense that he ascended, because, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he committed one selfless act after, like, what we've seen as a long-running character flaw of, like, being not selfless. Like, one of the funniest moments for me in this episode was, and I don't remember the exact quote, it's after Tendi spills the sand, and he's like, the sand is supposed to symbolize how fucking calm I've been my entire life. And like, he's angry and yelling while he's saying it. And that, to me, it just made me laugh out loud. And I didn't get that quote exactly right, but I liked that moment. And so it's hard for me to believe that, like, he demonstrates one selfless act, and then all of a sudden, like, he's ascending.
Well, it's a problem. I don't mean to interrupt, but the problem is that he was cool enough and he kissed one of our main characters that if he's not in the next few episodes, you know, we're going to kind of miss him. We're going to be like, where's O'Connor?
Yeah.
Where's Connor? And so they had to do something. I agree that it doesn't make any sense, but.
Well, cause it's a selfless act that not only does Tendi also perform within the same basic scene, but Star Trek characters perform all the time.
Right.
You know? And so, yes, but I think you're right, right? They had to come up with something to do with the character, but I also suppose she could have just like dated the dude for a little bit. I don't know if that would have been so bad.
And maybe he wouldn't have even been on screen. She could talk about how their relationship was going.
Yeah. If I were in the writer's room, I assume the writer's excuse is, well, but he dedicated his life and like maybe gained some sort of benefit from like the effort, and then the selfless act on top of the year's worth of effort was enough. But like, again, that feels like reaching for me, because.
Yeah, I agree. So the whole main plot, the whole big A plot, is they find an alien vessel that is a generational ship, which we've seen on Star Trek before, but everybody's dead. The cryotubes are busted. And what the cargo is a special liquid that when it touches inanimate matter, so metal, a tricorder, right? It turns into a life form. It grows into plants. In some cases, plant-like explosive bomb thingies. And this, of course, is a very volatile substance, and two California-class starships are tasked to haul the ship, one of which is the Cerritos, and in an act of pettiness, our Tellarite captain on the other ship basically causes an accident that lets this chemical leak out and get picked up by the tractor beams of the two starships, and the ship's hulls start to transform. It's a pretty good Star Trek-y plot, actually. I like it a lot. It's pretty, it's original in that they take a common concept in Star Trek, which is this generational ship and the tractor beams, and then put a whole new twist on it with this material that we've never seen any type of terraforming thing like that before. It's like the Genesis device, but as a liquid.
Right. Yeah. That's a good comparison.
So I loved it. I loved that whole concept. I thought it was such a cool idea, and I think that this is a good example of when animation is the right way to do something, because doing this with practical effects or CGI effects in a live action show would have been incredibly expensive and difficult to make look good, right? Yeah. But here they're able to use animation, and so they can do these giant crystals and plants growing all over the place and have the inside of the ship basically be like, you know, have like a waterfall and stuff, and have that work and look consistent with the rest of the show. So I loved every bit of it. I thought it was great.
It's also one of the first, well, it's also the first plot in this entire series of Lower Decks, which is only a few episodes, where about halfway through, I was genuinely thinking, I don't know how they're going to get out of this. Like, the other plots at this point have been fairly predictable or just simple. But this one's like, I don't know what they're going to do. And that was a cool feeling.
Yeah, there was that moment where you're like, are they already going to have to get another ship?
Yeah.
You know, I thought maybe they were going to start making that a running joke because, you know, the Enterprise is destroyed a few times. So there's the Cerritos is going to blow up every like 3 or 4 episodes.
And that'd be fun. The Cerritos could be the Kenny if this was South Park's or South Park. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Ray, what'd you think of this plot? Did you like it or not?
I actually really loved it, to be completely honest, because it put Mariner in her place, but at the same time also showcased what she's good at. And it kind of knocked, it did the exact same thing for Freeman. The two of them working together was a really good representation of parents and children, and, you know, not being able to let go, not being able to view your child as a capable adult, but also not really respecting your parents and like still behaving immaturely as like this rebel. So I thought it was an accurate depiction of parents and kids. And the actual, you know, situation itself seemed very Trek. It was a lot of fun. It would have been incredibly gorgeous and very expensive to do in live action. So I'm glad they were able to pull it off.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you 100%. I love their time together, Mariner and Freeman's time together. It's the first time that they've really they've admitted to each other in front of us that they're mother and daughter. It's the first time Mariner has said anything openly about it on the show. And, you know, I'm glad that we got some more of that. I'm glad that we got to see those interactions, because until now, they're just kind of jerks to each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I like this. This is better. This felt more real. And obviously the situation's silly, right? But the arguments are normal, petty arguments. You know, are you sure that's the rock you want to use? I don't think that's the right kind of rock you want to use to be digging. Don't you want something sharper? You know, the rock's fine. It's just a rock. Everything's fine. You know, I thought you wanted to go fast. Not that fast, right? Like, those are just normal bickering, you know, kind of conversations. And I like that.
I think we've all had parents criticize us pretty intensely before. So just small things like which rock she picked up felt very familiar.
Zach, I have to ask, are you watching Lower Decks with your daughters at all?
I am not. So I've watched, it's a good question. They've been here while I've watched it a few times. And my oldest daughter, she's just not interested. My youngest daughter, who her and I are a little bit closer just right now because of where they are developmentally. And she really values just being close to me. She'll usually be on her tablet while I'm watching something or playing a video game if we're sharing the same space. And so my youngest daughter has seen more of this show than my oldest. My oldest just like doesn't care, which is weird because she's into cartoons and she's into Avatar and all these other things. My youngest daughter, she watches it and she'll occasionally chime in with commentary, like, and asking questions about it. And I have occasional moments where, like, because she's also very sensitive. So like what the first episode she watched with me and Mariner impales Boimler's leg with a Batleth, and she just kind of like cringed and looked at me and she's like, is this okay for me to be here? Like kind of a look.
Well, I thought maybe your older daughter was at an age where if she saw the interaction between Mariner and Freeman, that she might, you know, maybe relate to that a little bit.
Right. No, she was not here today. I will have them this weekend. I may like put it on and see if she wants to like watch with me. Cause I want to rewatch for these, uniform malfunctions you saw, but I would be interested to see
just
if she
the
would.
One. It's just the
yeah.
one.
Right. But I would be interested as well to see if she relates to that that tension, because I mean, heck, even when her mom and I were together, like, that was very much their dynamic, was the argument. So
fair enough. But through all the bickering, right, and the back and forth, then they find this like mutual respect for each other, and Freeman's proud of Mariner because she is good at what she does. And I think that's why this episode really is sold for me, because up until now, we've seen this character who's a great Starfleet officer, but just be completely flippant about the responsibility. And it never made sense why she was on the ship, right? And now you get to see just how good she really is. She knows exactly what she's doing. She can handle herself as good or better than any of the senior officers. And her mom just never really saw that. She knew that the potential was there, but she never got to see the rubber meet the road.
Yeah.
You know, and this is when she gets to see it. And then, of course, it kind of devolves a little bit at the end, because Freeman wants to reward her daughter for being good at this. Be, you know, in the senior staff, stay a lieutenant. And Mariner, unfortunately, kind of goes back to the same old behavior. So we'll have to kind of see. Like, for me, what happens next is really important.
Yeah. I mean, it was just disappointing and yet not surprising. Like, I was watching the whole time thinking, okay, what's going to be the event that gets her back onto the lower decks? This show is called The Lower Decks. She's one of the main characters. She's not going to end up in a command position in episode 4. Mm-hmm. Maybe a few seasons in, one of them gets a command position and they have to, like, at least one of them, and they have to, like, navigate the weird dynamic of their relationship changing. And that would be fun to explore. But, like, right now, for season 1, early season 1, like, we're not going to lose one of our main characters to command.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. I expected Mariner to end up back as an ensign because she would have just asked her mother to send her back to being an ensign. I didn't expect the lessons that they learned to just kind of be thrown out the window at the end. That felt a little reset-y, which is, you know, a complaint some other Star Trek shows have had from time to time. Voyager!
I've not heard that
before. You know, and look, it's a half-hour cartoon and we're on episode 4, right? So maybe I'm being overly critical there, but I liked where it was going.
Sure. I like to hope that we didn't lose that character development despite this being kind of a sitcom reset button bottle show format for now.
Now, we do have Boimler's story, which, you know, maybe is a C-plot in a very small way, but he, of course, sees Mariner get rewarded in his mind, right? For her, it's a punishment, but for him, it's a reward for her bad behavior, because he wants to be in the senior staff and get promoted and be on the bridge. What did you guys think of Boimler's story in this episode?
So I didn't even think it's really a story, to be completely honest. It just felt like not even that. He was so very little part of this, but I feel like he's one of those nice guys can't win, nothing's ever easy, like, I'm gonna be thoroughly punished for doing the rules, for following the rules, and that kind of sucks because he is a cute little nice guy, but he learns the wrong lessons every time. And he just flat out wants to be promoted, and he doesn't understand exactly what Freeman is doing to Mariner. So he thinks in the middle of a catastrophe, he should pour coffee on Ransom's dick.
It's pretty funny though.
Yeah. Oh, it totally was.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah, it's not much of a story, but you feel for him, though, a little bit, because he is he's trying too hard, obviously, but he's trying, and he's a good officer. He does his job. He you know, follows orders, and he does them well, and I think, you know, it must be frustrating to see a colleague of yours like Mariner, who was given all of these opportunities and basically, from his perspective, wasted them.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has that whole line. He's like, this is everything I've ever wanted, and you don't even care, and you've got it. And that was interesting.
That's got to be hard for him, you know, to know that she doesn't want it. She doesn't want the responsibility. She doesn't want that kind of attention or that kind of life, but he does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's probably going to be a common thread throughout the whole show, is the battle between the two of them of who deserves it versus who gets it. You know,
yeah.
I'm not saying Mariner doesn't deserve it. She's obviously incredibly capable, right? But she doesn't want it.
Yeah,
and that's the key. You know, if you don't want it, it's kind of like it's kind of like Tapestry, going back to TNG a little bit, right? When Picard gets to go back in time thanks to Q and stop himself from fighting the Nosigans and getting stabbed through the chest and all that kind of stuff, he ceases to be a captain, right? He's an ensign, he's a science officer, he's still the same age, right? He's been an ensign forever. And the moral of that story was basically that he just didn't try to be better. He didn't try for anything else. He wasn't trying to become a captain.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
That's Mariner, right? Mariner's not trying to do those things. She'll survive, right? She'll make sure that people don't die, but that's kind of the extent of it.
Well, because she's in Starfleet for the adventure, to see new worlds, to use her brain to get out of dangerous situations. She's not in there to climb the corporate ladder. She doesn't want people underneath her. She doesn't want people to rely on her. She just wants to have new memories for herself, new adventures. And that rubs people the wrong way. We're not used to that as a species, and neither Starfleet. Starfleet's like, what do you mean you don't want more? You don't want more responsibility? You don't want more achievements? You don't want people to answer to you at any time? And she's just like, nah, don't really care. And Boimler, on the other hand, wants to captain and admiral and general and ascension, and so I think putting them both together is probably very frustrating for both of them, you know.
That's fair. Well, I think we've kind of covered all the major stuff that happens in Moist Vessel on Lower Decks this week. Was there any other thing that occurred or call out or anything else that you wanted to discuss? No? No?
Okay. No, I think Bueller. I'm good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then I think that's going to be it for us this week. Overall, I'm very happy with this episode. It sounds like you guys both are too. Not to put words in your mouth, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Verbal yeah. confirmation. Okay. And that's a good sign. You know, I've looked at a couple negative reviews just to kind of see, and you know, I mean, look, if you want to hate something, you're going to hate something, but there's some petty stuff in here. This guy, I just got to bring this up. I don't know that it's a guy. This person doesn't like that the Tellarite captain used the term terraforming. And I think that's because you have to, like, if you break down the word, Earth is Terra, right? We're Terrans, right? You've mm-hmm. got Vulcans and Cardassians. We're Terrans. We're not Earthlings in Star Trek. So terraforming is because Earth is Terra. So I think their argument would be that, like, a Tellarite would call it, like, Tellarforming. Teller is the name of their planet, so Tellarforming or planet forming, I guess, maybe would be the generic term for it. But, man, I don't know. That seems... seems a little
semantic. If you're looking for a reason to hate something, then you will find it. I'm surprised you didn't see the badge move.
I know, right? Like, come on. They call out a couple of other things on there, but you know, I just thought that was a little petty.
Yeah.
We've watched aliens who don't know humans well use colloquialisms in Star Trek for a very long time because, you know, we're the ones watching Star Trek, and
I mean, all Star Trek aliens are fairly humanoid, but with a different forehead, basically. So,
if they told me all the forehead of the weak characters were just a different species that Earth evolved into at one point, I would completely believe it. I'd be like, yeah, sure, all right,
Earth. Explorers from planet Earth went to a various planet and made love with its native species, and now we've got humanoids with weird foreheads, and that tracks for what I know of planet Earth and humankind.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of hoping that maybe we would see some more of the complex aliens, you know, like we have little bits of that, like we have Dr. Tiana on Lower Decks, and then we did have an alien in episode 2 or 3. I'm drawing a blank right now, but you know, I was hoping maybe we'd get to see a little bit more. You know, let's show me some Gorn. You know, we hardly ever get to see Gorn.
Yes, please.
They could pull that off very easily.
Right? You know, I think that this is a good opportunity to show us Tholians again, show us some more Tholians, because they're not humanoid either. Or, hey, bring species 8472 in. Like, those CGI models on Voyager don't look good, but it'd look fine on animation.
Yeah.
You know?
That would work.
Right? It's a good opportunity to, like, bring in some of these more complex species. But, you know, hey, what are you going to do? Maybe we'll get some.
It would be really cool if they could bring in people in the background as officers, people you wouldn't expect. Like, I think I would, like, jump at the screen, maybe, you know, have a voluntary or involuntary reaction physically if I saw a Cardassian walking around behind them in a uniform. Like,
yeah.
Starfleet, I'd be like, whoa, that needs an explanation. But that would be fun. Like, I think my favorite part of this whole TV show is the fact that the background is just as interesting as the foreground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have seen more Klingons. There are definitely more Klingons in Starfleet now than just Worf.
Yes.
Which is kind of cool. So, you know, but I was hoping that, yeah, we would see more Ferengi that follow in Nog's footsteps,
mm-hmm.
for example, would be pretty cool. You know, or, you know, this is a good opportunity to have more. I know we've seen an Andorian, but show us just some more. Just give me some more of that. This is your big opportunity to make, you know, the cantina type scene, you know, on a cheaper budget because it's animation. So,
yeah, give us that diversity.
But yeah. All right. So let's wrap this up. We're kind of meandering a bit at this point. Next week, we will be back, of course, to discuss episode 5. Of Star Trek Lower Decks, and I'm going to pull up the title of that episode here, because this episode's title was Moist Vessel. I have to keep saying it for anybody who's playing the
was
game.
It what was today's episode?
Moist Vessel.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually don't, IMDb doesn't have episode 5's title, which is kind of interesting.
Weird.
I assumed it would be out. I'm checking Memory Alpha here real quick. Memory Alpha doesn't have it either. So we're stuck with Moist Vessel then, part 2, next week.
That's what's coming up, yeah. Moister vessels.
Ooh, I like it. The moistest vessel. all right. But we'll be back next week to talk episode 5 of Star Trek Lower Decks. And next week is our 100th episode here on Red Shirts and Runabouts, which is pretty cool and pretty exciting. I'm happy about that, finally hit triple digits here.
Halfway through the second animated series, we will hit episode 100.
Yeah, that's a good feeling, and I'm glad you guys will be here with me. So I don't have to celebrate alone in the depths of space.
I've been on at least a dozen of the 100 episodes.
you were on almost all of the movie review episodes.
That's true. That's true.
You know, so I think we did.
We did Short Treks together.
There you go. Right. So you've definitely been on double digit episodes at this point.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All right, but we're gonna call it. So let's do this. So Ray, if people want to reach out and talk to you about Star Trek or superhero movies or whatever it is that you crazy kids are talking about these days, how might they find you?
I'm at Siren Ray.
And Zach, if people want to talk to you about nerdy type things, how might they find you?
At AvengerZS on Twitter.
Perfect. And I'm, of course, at the Star Trek Dude on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find the show Red Shirts and Runabouts at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter or heroespodcast.com. We're part of the Heroes Podcast Network. You can find our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, Podcast Addict. You can stream it from our website. Find it wherever you find your podcasts. And I'm just going to ask you to leave us a review. If you go to Apple Podcasts, go to Podcast Addict, leave us a review. Let us know your thoughts. If you do, we will read your review on the show, and good or bad. And if it's too bad, maybe we'll poke fun at it a little bit. But we will we will reference it on the show. I promise you that if you do that. So join our Facebook group, which is Redshirts and Runabouts, facebook.com/group/redshirtsandrunabouts. We're doing lots of fun stuff in there. We talk Lower Decks, Picard, Discovery, TNG, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, the original series, all the movies, every timeline, doesn't matter what it is, memes and polls and news. Come talk Star Trek with us. Otherwise, we will catch you next week. Live long and prosper.